Baseball's All-Star Game will be played next Tuesday, and in keeping with our All-Star theme, I should note that my guest Jim Boughton played in one All-Star Game in 1963, in which he pitched one scoreless inning. Boughton's 1970 memoir, Ball Four, was considered scandalous at the time it was published. Boughton described players' behind-the-scenes antics, getting drunk, peeping through keyholes at women, and taking uppers before games, the kinds of things you didn't read about in sports magazines. Outraged baseball commissioner Bowie Kuhn said the book did a grave disservice to the sport. The book's champions thought it was about time sports writers stopped sanitizing the game for the public. These days, Jim Boughton runs his own product development company, does motivational speaking, and is working on a novel about, what else, baseball. I spoke to Boughton in 1986, and he told me a story that might help explain why Mickey Mantle doesn't like to talk about Boughton's book.
I think the most controversial story in the book was I told about the time Mickey Mantle hit a home run with a hangover. And it wasn't really even so much as a put-down of Mickey Mantle as it was a story of what a great athlete he was. I told about the time we were in Minnesota, and we'd been out the night before a game having a few drinks, about 2 o'clock in the morning, I guess it was. I don't want to say Mickey was drunk, but he spent about a half an hour trying to make a telephone call from a grandfather's clock. So he comes into the ballpark the following morning, and he's hungover, and the manager says, you know, sleep it off. Most managers were players themselves. They understand you come to the ballpark once in a while with a hangover. So Mick is sleeping in the trainer's room. We're playing the Minnesota Twins. We got to stick somebody else in the outfield. And so the game's going on and gets tie score after 9 innings. And in about the 12th inning, the manager says, I hate to do it, but I'm going to need a pinch hitter in the 13th. Go in and wake up the Mick. So we go in the trainer's room, you know, wake up Mickey Mantle, dress him in his uniform, steer him through the tunnel up into the dugout. 13th inning comes around. He put a bat in Mickey's hands and point him in the direction of home plate. The Mick staggers up to the plate. Fortunately, he's a switch hitter. Doesn't matter what side he gets on. Steps into the batter's box. They show you what a great athlete this guy was. And Mickey was the best ball player I ever saw. He takes one practice swing, and it's the first pitch into the center field bleachers. A tremendous blast 450 feet away. We win the game. The crowd is going nuts, and the players are going crazy in the dugout. We're laughing and pointing and screaming and slapping each other on the back, and suddenly it occurs to us, he still has to round those bases. There's a rule in baseball that you must touch the bases in order. Fortunately, he heads off in the right direction. The minute he hits first base, the entire dugout goes, make a left. Goes around, touches second, touches third, comes across, misses home plate. We have to send him back for that. Comes over to the dugout, and of course, the fans are giving him a standing ovation. And as he's waving to the crowd, he looks at us in the dugout and he says, those people don't know how tough that really was. I went over to his locker afterwards and I said, how did you do that? You couldn't even see up there. He said, it was very simple. I hit the middle ball. So if this destroys America's illusions about baseball or Mickey Mantle, then I don't know what you do with all the literature that's come out since then, where each player tries to top the next in terms of what he can tell or how far he can go.
Well, did you have illusions when you were growing up of baseball players being perfect human beings?
Sure, I thought they were.
And very pure.
I thought they were all American kids. I really did. I thought you didn't drink, you didn't smoke, and you didn't stay out late at night, and that's how you got to the big leagues. And that's pretty much how I lived my life when I was a kid. And I finally got to the big leagues. My first night with the New York Yankees, we were on a road trip in Washington, D.C. I'll never forget this. We're staying at the Shoreham Hotel. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, there's a knock on my door, and it's Whitey Ford, Mickey Mantle, Cleet Boyer, Ralph Terry, half the team are there. They want to take me up on the roof of the Shoreham Hotel to get drunk and look in windows. And I realized I wasn't in shape to be a major league ball player.
This is look in windows to see women undress.
Whatever. But it was crazy. I mean, I thought, geez, is this what it's like to be in the big leagues? But, I mean, I wasn't turned off by it. I wasn't disgusted by it. I just said, this is crazy. This is wacky. This is funny. I still enjoyed playing baseball in the big leagues. I mean, I still thought Mickey Mantle was a great ball player. I stopped seeing ball players and athletes as super people. But I think that's a healthy thing. And I don't think anybody should look up to athletes as special people. They're not special people. They're ordinary people with special skills, and that's it.
We're listening to a 1986 interview with Jim Boughton. He'll talk about his pitching career in a minute. This is Fresh Air. Former pitcher and writer Jim Boughton is my guest. If you could start in baseball again, would you want to go back as a pitcher?
I think so. I enjoyed, you know, initiating the action. I enjoyed the thinking and the strategy involved in figuring out what pitch to throw. I could never stand around in the outfield waiting for something to happen. That wasn't me. I had to be the quarterback. I had to be the pitcher. I had to be involved in the activity. Maybe I could have been a catcher, but pitching is much more suited to my personality.
Pitching careers are subject to more problems than other careers are, I think, because your arm is so vulnerable and your career depends on your arm, and it's what you're abusing all the time.
Sure, and pitching is not a natural motion. Throwing a ball as hard as you can 120 times every 4 days is not natural, and it's going to take its toll on your arm, and a lot of people get sore arms and get burned out in high school, and they never ever get anywhere. Some guys do it and burn out in college. Some guys burn out in the minor leagues. Some guys burn out after 2 or 3 years in the big leagues, like I did. Others just can throw forever, seemingly, but it's hard to tell. You'd almost have to cut their arms open and figure out why some arms are able to tolerate it more than others.
To play well, you're damaging your most valuable asset, which is your arm. How would you evaluate pain to decide whether this pain was the kind of pain you just play with or whether this was the kind of pain that meant permanent damage and that would really hurt you in the months and years to come?
A great question, because that was always the hardest thing to do as an athlete. Does this thing that's hurting me now, should I stop because it's going to ruin my career, or am I babying myself, and if I don't push past this pain, I'm never going to get better? So you never knew, you know, you would just have to take that chance and push past it, because you have sore arms all your life. I had a sore arm, you know, through my entire childhood, but it would get better and it would get sore and it would get better. It's like climbing trees when you're a kid. Once in a while, you're going to fall out of the tree. You just hope you don't get hurt too badly and climb back up there again. Either, if you wanted to will a perfect arm to science, you shouldn't be a baseball player.
You say that most pitchers are paranoid about their arm. What would you worry about or try not to do?
Well, you try not to sleep on it funny. You try not to, you never reach into your toilet articles bag for your razor with your right hand. When you're on the road trip, you always reach in with your left hand so you don't grab a razor blade. If you trip and fall, you immediately turn your body to the left. I have never gotten an injection in my right arm. I was always afraid of getting an infection, an infected needle, creating some sort of a problem. So you're always looking to protect your arm.
Did you have to change your pitching style because of injuries you were getting?
Well, I had to change my pitching style when I wasn't able to throw hard anymore. See, what happened was I threw very hard when I first came up. I was a overhand fastball pitcher. And then when I hurt my arm, I wasn't able to throw hard for a while, and then when I did, the ball didn't have that zip on it anymore. It didn't have that snap, even though the ball was traveling as fast, it wasn't moving. So it's like taking a rubber band and stretching it too far, and then it never gets its elasticity back again, and that's what happened to my arm. So I had to change from being a fastball pitcher to a knuckleball pitcher. Fortunately, when I was a kid, I threw a knuckleball, which is not a pitch that requires very much strength. It's a skill pitch. You push it off with your fingertips. The idea is to get the ball to go through the air without any rotation, and then it jumps around all by itself. And so I became a knuckleball pitcher to compensate for the fact that I couldn't throw hard anymore.
How hard are knuckleballs to hit?
They're almost impossible to hit when you throw a good one. The difficulty is throwing a good one. When you don't throw a good one, anybody can hit them. That's the problem with a knuckleball. Nobody can hit a well-thrown knuckleball, and almost anybody can hit a poorly thrown knuckleball.
Say it was a full count and there were a couple of men on base. What would you throw? Would you throw a knuckleball knowing that if you made one wrong move, it might be a home run because it's
yes,
easy to hit?
I would throw a knuckleball. I would throw a knuckleball because my feeling is I would rather live and die with my best pitch than take a chance with something that wasn't my best.
Did you have any gestures that you had to do before you threw a pitch and, like, rub your hand on your side three times or?
Nothing, nothing that was superstitious. I'm sure I went through the same sort of little rituals before I threw the ball because it's important to do that, and athletes need to do that, and many performers need to do that because those are the little steps that are really part of the process. Throwing a ball is not just throwing a ball. Part of it starts when you walk out to the mound, how you walk out to the mound, how you feel about yourself, how you feel when you're standing on the mound, what you think of the relationship between home plate and the mound and the fans and the batter and the whole, all of that, the rosin bag in your hand, how that ball feels. And you want to start playing with that ball in your hand so you get that feeling, and you want to recreate the memory, the muscle memory that brings you back to the last time you were really throwing well. And that whole process starts long before you actually throw the ball.
Why do pitchers like to chew when they're on the mound?
Part of it is because of the nervousness and the tension, and it sort of chewing relieves that. But the spitting part is different, okay? Spitting and also all this crotch grabbing and spitting back and forth that you see in Major League Baseball, there's a real reason for that. There's a behavioral reason for that, and that is that what these are is macho displays, okay? It's a man-to-man challenge out there, the pitcher versus the batter, and it's very much like two cats squaring off where they both have to sort of urinate on the shrubbery saying, okay, this is my yard, I own this space, and the other cat saying, yeah, but I own my space, and then they're fighting. You see, what the batter is he steps into the batter's box and he spits all over the place. He's saying that's his turf. The pitcher's saying, oh yeah, well, this is my turf out here, and now we'll see who's the best. And so that's why you have this. It's a marking of territory, and it's a macho display. It's like, it's that mano a mano challenge situation, you know, and that's what they are. They're animals marking their territory.
Jim Boughton, I want to thank you very much.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
Former Yankees pitcher Jim Boughton, recorded in 1986.